a very, very driven mother, particularly. I was largely raised by a single mother. Was able to get the very most from education, and also got a scholarship to be a cathedral chorister at Peterborough. This was the time of Alid Jones, and I was the black version, but I didn't go on to have a good musical career. But basically, I found my voice, if you like, in Peterborough. I always say that. The ability to stand up and do a solo in Peterborough Cathedral is something that I always feel when I'm at the dispatch box in the House of Commons, in a way. But I also begun to realise how very, very fortunate I was. And even though I became a barrister and a lawyer, I suppose I walk in the tradition of many barristers and lawyers who keep coming back to this desire to want to change the entire system and not just, you know, make change in individual cases. I found myself in my community in Tottenham when the late, great Bernie Grant MP died very suddenly, and I put my name forward and I entered politics.
Cool. Douglas, same question to you.
I think, like most people, I'm shaped by my upbringing. In that sense, my father was the warden of Community House for the Iona community in Glasgow throughout the 1960s, which in its day was a very radical experiment in work and witness. It was the site of the inaugural meeting of the anti-apartheid movement in Scotland. It was where the Upper Clyde shipbuilder shop stewards met when they decided to have their work in. It was where Alcoholics Anonymous met for the first time in Scotland. So it was a hugely radical and very exciting place. I was very young at the time, but it is from that tradition that I come. And in that sense, politics was talked a lot in my household. My mother and father, although members of the Labour Party, because my father became a parish minister in 1970, weren't active in the party, but they nonetheless talked a lot of politics. So in 1982, the community which I now have the privilege of representing, David and I are quite unusual these days in the sense we both represent the areas in which we grew up. The main employer in that community in 1982 was the Linwood car plant, and it closed with a devastating effect on the lives and the prospects of the parents of the people I was at school with. And I really had no memory of the previous Labour governments of the 1970s, but I had an instinct that government could be a force for good in people's lives rather than what I was witnessing in Renfrewshire at the time. And so I took the decision to join the Labour Party. I joined an organisation which was called the Young Socialists. I was there and there were three 23-year-olds. I was 14 at the time. And so it wasn't perhaps the most powerful example of pluralist democratic conversation, but it got me started. And in that sense, I stayed engaged. And if I think about why I do stay engaged, I think it's really for two reasons. Firstly, because politics is about serving a community, and in that sense, I do believe you have the opportunity to make a difference in people's lives. But it's also about serving a cause. It's about having a coherent vision of what the good society should be, accepting the discipline that that imposes upon you as an individual, because that's what affects the manifesto and the policies that you advocate. But that combination of serving a community and serving a cause is really the petrol in the tank and keeps me going.
Okay, I just want to pick you up on that point that you made, that both you and David serve the communities which you grew up in. And David, what's it like to represent your kind of people, people that you know, the community that you're very familiar with?
When I was running for Tottenham, this was in 2000, so it's now nine years ago, the Standard newspaper came up, Evening Standard. I think they wanted to prove that I wasn't really local. And it was one of those wonderful days where the journalists spent time with me and we bumped into dinner ladies, youth workers, local priests came around the corner. At one point, my mother drove round in her Mini. It did not feel like an urban, large metropolis kind of constituency. It very much felt like a local community. And I hope many in the audience will recognize that my community is close-knit, that there are huge, complex challenges. This is a constituency this year that has hit the headlines once again with the Baby P case. It is not unusual for people to come to my constituency surgery with some of the real tragedies, fleeing many, many countries to arrive in England through complex immigration problems. These are people who represent or at the forefront of really governments still struggle to get people decent housing in this country. And then, of course, knife crime and other things. So in a sense, I become a beacon in that community for many, many frustrations, because there are deep frustrations, political frustrations, with the systems that exist around people. But I think I also become a beacon for hope as well, because I am in the end from that community, and in a sense, people associate me as the MP with some degree of success. So round about this time of year, when young people are getting their GCSE results and their A-levels, and I'm in my community, there is a kind of joyous occasion, because parents and teachers understand what that means. I mean, I think there are lots of other sides to being in London particularly. You know, your constituents tend to be, how can I put this, they're a bit chippier maybe than some other parts of the country. Their deference is not something that I would associate at all with my constituency. I'm lucky that as a London MP, I never engaged in a second home, which has served me very well.
I wasn't going to do that.
But I think I've also got to be very serious. In a sense, despite all the challenges that exist in a constituency like mine, and they are immense, I kind of feel that this next 10 years, things get tougher. The economy is tougher. And the sorts of things that brought me into politics, unemployment particularly, are very, very real, and economic challenges are very, very real to people. And I think the thing that, and in a sense it's part of the reason I think we're having this discussion, the thing that certainly Douglas and I have talked about in the past is, if we kind of came into politics partly because we were deeply concerned about education and we knew how important that was, and concerned about work, meaningful work, then I think at this point in time, the three other planks of what I think makes a successful society, aspiration, community, and parenting, are absolutely critical in a community like mine. So that this is a diverse community with over 300 languages spoken. It's a community that does struggle with drugs and addiction. It's a community where there are many, many broken homes and families. And it's that values discussion amidst what is a very, very demanding time particularly, that most informs the way people react to me as their local MP.
How does your constituency compare as a community with David's?
It's pretty different. It's about one of the most monocultural constituencies in Scotland, never mind in Britain. So in that sense, I'm always struck when I get home on a Friday morning just how white a community it is. It's very settled. It is populated by a combination of people who have lived there all their lives and people who have moved out from Glasgow. It's 6 miles west of Glasgow. But I think one of the things that we have in common is that if you represent a community in which you grew up, then the politics is very up close and personal, in the sense that there is a sense of ownership and belonging. And I know that there's many people here with a church background and are committed to their churches. I think at its best, one of the glories of the British political system, and there are many faults, is the constituency system, because I think it gives an integrity to the relationship between the individual and the community. Because certainly in my case, and I'm sure it's the same with David, it's a weekly reminder, maybe a daily reminder if you represent a London constituency, that at a very fundamental level, politics is not about you as the elected representative. It's about the people that you're called to serve. And in that sense, that manifests itself in a whole range of different ways. I had a coffee morning surgery in my constituency a week ago yesterday. It was on the Friday morning. Basically means you put out 600 letters to people saying, I'll be in Johnson Castle Community Centre between 10 and 12. If there's any issues you want to come and talk to me about, I'm happy to do so. And we got a pretty standard caseload last Friday morning. There were people, a couple of people on immigration, about five people on council housing. But there was one guy who waited until the end and came and said, could I speak to you privately? And I said, of course. And we sat down at one of the tables. And he introduced himself and he said, I'm a joiner. But he said, I have only had a week's work in the last year. And he said, I've got a 22-year-old who's just graduated from Glasgow Caledonian University. And I've got a 15-year-old son at home. And he said, I'm just ashamed that my son has watched me for the last year sitting at home, because I've got two nephews who are in prison, and I've always felt that the way that I bring up my son is going to decide which route he takes. And he said, I'm not asking you to give me a job, I just want you to know how bad things are at the moment. And he says, I'm wanting you to give me some encouragement that this recession is going to end, because the construction industry has flattened his back. And he was a man with, all of us meet people all the time in our work, but he was a man of immense personal dignity. And so I listened to him and I talked about the steps and the policies that the government's pursuing. But he was really on my conscience, and I talked to my wife Jackie that evening, on the Friday evening, after I'd undertaken to write to him on the Monday. And I said, listen, you know, every now and again you meet a constituent who really gets to you. And I said, I feel I've got to do more for this. And we talked about it and we said, well, if any of us are in a position to help somebody else in those circumstances, you should. So I phoned a few people on the Saturday morning, one in particular who runs construction businesses in Glasgow, and said, listen, can you do me a turn? There's a constituent who I met for the first time yesterday morning. He's been on my conscience overnight. I'm just asking, would you give him some advice? I didn't ask him to give him a job, but I said, can you give him some advice? Because I get the sense that he's wanting to do his best. And he said, tell me about him. And I explained. He said, he's 45, he's a joiner, he's looking for a job as a window cleaner or as a taxi driver or anything to get himself back on his feet. And he said, listen, I can't promise I can make him a joiner, but I can certainly give him a hand and we can do something. So on Sunday afternoon, I was looking after the kids. I went round to his house, said, can you give me a couple of minutes? I said, listen, here's somebody. I want you to get your CV into him on Monday morning. And he said, whereabouts is it? He says, I'm not going to trust the post. I'll deliver it myself on Monday morning. And I got back to my constituency office on Thursday to say that he'd been for an interview on Tuesday and he's going to be getting a job. Now, in that sense, you just need one story like that every so often. And it means you can put up with an awful lot of the sewage that as a politician you have to wade through on an almost daily basis. And in that sense, I think it is like a parish ministry. It's about reminding you, in the case of the church, that the real community is not the people in the pews on a Sunday morning, it's the community outside. I think it's the same thing at its best with a constituency.
I just want to go back to one of the three things that you mentioned can really build a community, David, which is parenting. And, you know, there's an example there from your constituent. But how can you, I want to ask you both this question, how can you possibly have an effect on something like parenting? It almost feels like you're getting too close there. Or
this is a really vexed question in politics. I'm very clear what side of the debate I'm on. That there are some people who believe that politics must avoid the nanny state. Politicians must avoid being anywhere near the private domain. I have to say, I don't want the heavy hand of politics and inappropriate politics, but I do think we are living in a time where the business of representation and politics has to have something to say about family, because if you believe in society, then by definition you have to have something to say about, I think, the most important unit in society. And this is hugely important at this point in the 21st century. Most of us understand the idea of primary socialization. That is that my mother particularly, my elder brothers, my father when he was around, had a big impact on my socialization. But the truth is, when my father left us, and I was age 12 at the time, in the context of broader masculinity, I also sought secondary socialization. My peers became very important. Some of them were doing constructive things in the community. Others were not. What I see today in our society is that that sphere of secondary socialization has grown. I don't know about you, but the watershed on television seems to have evaporated. Choice is everywhere when you can choose what kind of program you want. I find particularly in the black community, if I can call it that, if you want to, if you're young and growing up in a constituency like mine, you can listen to one sort of music for the whole day that peddles a certain kind of rhythm and communicates a certain kind of value set that largely comes out of a certain kind part of urban America. Now, it wasn't that wasn't around when I was growing up, but there were other things around as well, partly because the choice was limited. We live in a world where clearly politicians, and certainly in my party, are having to grip the limits of the marketplace. They grip that in relation to how we want to talk about food, particularly, and inform people in an age where we have to grip issues of consumption and what people eat. And we are concerned about an age in which you can advertise, particularly to children, in particular ways, never mind the broader economy and how we regulate the economy. So that, by definition, gets you into a turf and a ground that is about parenting. And let me say this, and I hope that this audience, above all else, understands the spirit from which this comes. One of the saddest moments I've had this year was in relation to the Baby P case. It was a sad moment for all the obvious reasons to do with deep concern when a child is effectively murdered in the way that that child was. But what was sadder was that my instinctive response from the community that I'm from and with the faith position that I occupy was that when a child dies in those circumstances, all of us must bear responsibility. From the neighbours, to the shopkeepers, to those who work in our public services, all of us as a community must bear some responsibility. And I am very, very sad that the debate turned into a discussion that minimized and demeaned the contribution, particularly of social workers, who I see doing some of the best value work in our communities.
I suppose, Douglas, again, it's different in Paisley South. I mean, you wouldn't dare tell people how to parent their children there, would you?
Well, I think we still carry the legacy of back to basics. Not in a cheap partisan point, but I think it meant that for more than a decade, politicians were terrified of engaging in a conversation about the family because it was perceived as inevitably meaning that there was moralising going on at best and at worst gross hypocrisy and double standards from the individual politicians. And I don't want to get into that kind of moralising debate, but I do think having a conversation not about family structure, but about family need is absolutely fundamental to our politics. And it's important for a couple of reasons, at least. One of those reasons is, of course, that, as David says, the institution in which many of us learn a moral language and are socialized are families, for good or ill. And in that sense, we can't deny the fact that they continue to be incredibly powerful parts of the ecology of our society. And in that sense, if we are rendered voiceless and have nothing to say about the family, our politics has diminished. But from the centre-left perspective that I come from, it's also incredibly important because good families work on the basis not of contracts and exchange, but on upholding non-material values. You know, when my kids were misbehaving in the tent last night, I didn't say, I will give you £5. I was getting to my wit's end by that point. I might actually have said that, but we had a conversation about other things in terms of why they really, really needed to go to their bed and couldn't go back to main stage. And in that sense, it is not about contracts, markets, and exchange. It upholds a different set of values if a family works well. And one of the things that I struggle with as a politician in Paisley at the moment is the organisations and the delicate network of institutions that upheld those non-material values in a different time, I think is actually diminished. And I think that's part of the reason that people are so cynical about politicians today. Because actually we are asked to bear the burden to a greater extent than in the past, not simply for articulating that non-material values, but also for generating those non-material values. And I think that's a load that many of us aren't adequate to bear. And in that sense, if I look at Paisley 20 or 30 years ago when I was growing up, the chances are there would have been somebody in the street who was a trade unionist, a shop steward, and whose sense of worth and belonging in that traditional working class community did not come from the fact that they were famous or a celebrity, or from the fact that they earned a lot of money, but that they had a time-served trade. It wasn't a coincidence that that man last week told me I'm a time-served joiner, because that's a legacy of a community that still upholds skill and craftsmanship as being important. And in that sense, whether it is traditionally organised trade unions, whether, frankly, it is the church in Paisley, many of those institutions that historically have been transmitters of non-material values and create the reservoir of values from which the best progressive politicians have been able to draw in terms of their language and their policies, that well's actually a bit depleted at the moment. And I think that's part of the crisis in our public life at the moment. And that's not to say that we should go back to a lifestyle of the 1950s. It is to say, I think if we want to have strong communities, we need to find ways to generate and to sustain those values, those non-material values, which actually help define families, friendship, many of the things that actually are the very best aspects of our lives.
Well, it's totally to agree with what Douglas has said, and also to say that I think this is in part generational, and I don't want to offend those in the audience who are a bit older, but I do want to say that clearly this is about leadership, and I think people want politicians to lead, and they want them to lead in partnership with others in communities and speak about things that relate to what they're experiencing. And sometimes we're a bit mechanical in the way that we tend to communicate, particularly in a world where it's about short clips and short sound bites. It's incredibly unusual, sadly, in our public life to be able to see two politicians actually speaking for this length of time and it not truncated to a short sentence. That is depressing about our modern life. And I think that I owe a lot to a generation of people that grew up between 1946 and 1964, came of age in that period, that generation that we call baby boomers, because in a sense, it was that generation that particularly moved forward on issues of equality, and, you know, which in a sense brings me to this stage, campaigning against apartheid, for race relations, for the rights for women, and for other minorities in communities. But it's also right to say that that has also been a period of time in which things like consumption have gone out of control. Private capital and property out of control. And what I see amongst two different generations, Generation X, which is my generation, and Generation Y, which are those young people in school and just starting university, is actually a deep desire for a discussion about values a deep concern about the environment, a deep concern about the nature of work, a deep concern about issues like commercialization. And that new wave, that new generation, is what politics has to respond to.
I think one of the paradoxes of our public life is that we are called upon as politicians, and goodness knows as government ministers, to have concern for the material world. You know, my department has a budget of £7.8 billion in order to address material poverty and inequality. And both of us, in our daily lives and our constituencies, experience people who are still living lives that are undoubtedly diminished by the absence of material goods, about income, about housing, those basic requirements. And in that sense, I think the challenge for our generation of politicians is not to deny the continuing challenge of equality and the need for people to have lives that aren't diminished by poverty, whether globally or locally, but at the same time to find our voice and to be able to articulate what I think most of us do in our own private lives, which is to live lives not defined by materialism, but actually where we recognise that there are other values. And I think the challenge is there the space for politicians to have that conversation? And are there politicians capable of finding their voice? One of the things I found most exciting, and there were many, about Barack Obama's election, was that actually he was quite literally the voice of a different generation. And I think historically on the centre-left, we took such a battering in the 1980s that much of our politics has been defined as a compromise with the market, which reached its kind of nadir in 1992 when we put forward our shadow budget under John Smith and we lost. And many people drew powerful lessons from that about the character of the British people and what you needed to do to win. And I don't sit on this stage today and diminish the choices they made, because 10 years of a Labour government in my constituency has made a massive difference to the material well-being, to the physical infrastructure of the new schools and the new health facilities, etc., etc. But I think if our politics is going to stay relevant and engaged, I think of politics like kind of plugs and sockets, and political parties are either plugged into live currents of debate and feeling, or they're disconnected. If we're going to be plugged into the live sockets of political debate and engagement over the next decade, then actually I think there has to be a much bigger part of our conversation which is consciously values-led, which recognises the deep dilemmas and concerns that people face over environmental sustainability. I think either we get that politics or we will be rendered irrelevant. I think consumption is a big part of that, but it's an incredibly challenging conversation to engage with the public, and in that sense some of the sessions here at Greenbelt I hope will take forward our thinking on that. But whether it is consumption, whether it is the role of the market, whether it is environmental sustainability, I think there are currents that simply weren't as prominent or as potent in our public life 10 years ago, and either we get with those currents or actually we'll find ourselves pushed aside.
You are both operating in a completely different culture, though, now. You mentioned fame and celebrity earlier, and I know there are plenty of celebrities that have come out of Paisley South, because you've run me through a list earlier. But that whole culture that celebrates a single person's aspirations, how do you change that to put a community aspiration in place? Because that, you know, you're fighting against quite a strong current there, aren't you, Douglas?
It's true that we've had a number of celebrities from Paisley in recent
years. I set you up there.
Years. You have set me up. David Tennant, Church of Scotland minister's son from Paisley, Doctor Who. Impressed? Yep.
He's in the audience.
Let's just say, one Church of Scotland minister's son went on and became a Labour government minister and the other one became Doctor Who. Who do you think's more popular? Certainly in this universe. Paolo Nutini, chip shop owner from Paisley's son, now Reading Festival this weekend, doing incredibly well. So we've had a few, but one of the two previous winners of Fame Academy came from Paisley. I voted for him 5 times. Now, let's be honest, the reason I voted was not outrageous electoral fraud. It's because we need, in a community like Paisley, and I'd be interested in David's thoughts in Tottenham, we don't have that many winners in Paisley. And in that sense, the idea that we have people who can aspire to be musicians or to be actors or to do anything is incredibly important in reflecting the sense of ambition that David talked about earlier as being important in the community. So I don't make any apology for the fact that I do my best in the community to promote the fact that when I meet kids who are growing up at the wrong end of the social arithmetic, I say to them, listen, you can aspire to anything. I went to a comprehensive school in this community and I'm now a member of the cabinet. If you want to be a footballer or you want to be a joiner or you want to be a cabinet member, you've got the right to aspire to do anything growing up in this community. And I think that instinct is incredibly important. But I think the risk for us is this. I think the barrier between what politicians did or what other people in communities of prominence did and celebrity has broken down in recent years. And I'll let you into a secret, which is not a secret at all. I'm a hopeless celebrity. I really don't aspire to project myself into Heat magazine or into the tabloids or wherever the hell it is. But let's be honest, if even somebody who is as exciting to progressive politics as Barack Obama has mastered the art of celebrity. And in that sense, I have the humility to say, in the coming generation of politicians, I think we will need politicians who regrettably have more of those skills than certainly I do, because actually that is the sea that we are now asked to swim in as politicians. The era in which a politician could try and do their job with integrity, deliver well in terms of the department they're working in, alas, I'm quite pessimistic about that because of the demands the media place on politicians these days. But on the other hand, I do think it's critical that we use whatever channels are available to us to send out that message that if you want to see the kind of deep structural changes in the communities we represent, then simply doing a good turn to an individual who turns up in a constituency surgery is never going to be enough, because there's never going to be enough MPs, never enough surgeries to find jobs for everybody who needs it. If you do actually believe in serving those communities, then engaging in the hard, grinding, but ultimately rewarding task of party politics still matters.
David, what about you? Big aspirations for communities, how can you inspire those?
Well, just on Douglas's point about winners and the lack of winners or wanting winners in Paisley, obviously I need to put on record that representing a constituency with one of the best clubs in the Premiership we have, who are currently top of the league, we have examples of winners every Saturday. But
it's quite early in the season, David.
Being a or supporting Tottenham is a bit like supporting the Labour Party. You know, there are ups and downs. But what I'm concerned about, I guess, is the aspiration. So on that point of celebrity, I don't really want to take issue with who is a celebrity or who isn't a celebrity, or the way people become notorious or in their in public life. But I am concerned about how there are beacons that people can aspire to and how those voices are understood in society and those paths are understood. And I see this as Minister for Higher Education. I see it in the sorts of choices that young people in my constituency have available to them when they're making decisions about which university they want to go to or what course they want to apply for. Very few of them are going to know a lawyer or an architect or a doctor. Even fewer of them are going to know an engineer. And then having access to the wealth of jobs in our new environmental economy or even our new digital economy are going to be really, really hard. There's a lot of noise in modern society. You know, the noise of Coca-Cola and Nike and MTV Bass drown out a lot of this stuff. And that's a real challenge for us as politicians working with public services, particularly to convey some of those messages. So I think that the hope in terms of those who believe in society and those who believe in participation, and it relates to the way in which Barack Obama was able to become president of the United States, is this new community, the ability for those coming to Greenbelt to continue these conversations now online with people in different parts of the country, to participate and be involved in communities that are actually much further than where you are. And all the new possibilities that are coming out. I heard about a website launched very, very recently that encourages people at festivals, at conferences, if they have a spare couple of hours, to go out into the community at which the conference is being held and take their skills and do something. That would be fantastic in a community like mine. So there is huge potential to be in that social sphere, to be in that values sphere, to put politics into action. And that's a challenge then back to political parties. Political parties have to be more than just the visit, the knock every 4 or 5 years for the election, the communication that these are my ideas and this is what I want to do for you. We too have to be in that participatory model. We have to be putting our politics into action, and our members do particularly, and those members need to be made up of, I hope, people in this room, in local community, showing your values by action. That is the big, big challenge to us, I think, in the 21st century.
Douglas, can I invite you to dream a dream? You know, now if you've got to walk down around your constituency, what would be the signs that communities that you worry about are starting to mend? What would make you go, yeah, it's working?
Let me see, firstly on that, I think one of the miscalculations that I made, I've been the MP for Paisley for 12 years, and it doesn't contradict what I've said about the material poverty of Paisley, but I think I overemphasized the capacity of work to heal the community that I now represent. Because my formative experience in politics was of mass unemployment in Paisley. And in that sense, we believed that if we made Paisley a community at work, then many of the social ills and problems that the town encountered would simply disintegrate. And actually, they are much more complex and much more challenging than that. And I think part of our challenge as politicians is to have the humility to say work matters. It matters critically to a healthy community. But often beyond work, government can be all thumbs and no fingers in trying to stimulate that genuine sense of community. George MacLeod, who was the founder of the Ainu community, said, if you want to create a community, give people a common task. And in that sense, if I had to look around Paisley and think, what are the signs of community? It will not simply be those traditional forms of community that I grew up with, but it will be different. Let me give you two examples. The Boys Brigade, which I was a member of in Paisley for many years, is celebrating its 125th anniversary this year. And so it was starting this week, it starts a little earlier in Scotland, so I was meeting with representatives of the Boys Brigade, senior section officers. They do a wonderful job. But actually, and I have a great deal to be grateful to for the Boys Brigade, because for about 2 or 3 years in my teens, 2 or 3 nights a week, I was doing things with the BB. I was learning to canoe, or I was learning to swim, or playing in the band, or whatever it was. But actually, that ability of Paisley to sustain those kind of activities was reliant on the dads, and they were largely dads, finishing work at 5 o'clock, getting home, having their tea, and being outside the church hall or the community centre by 6 o'clock or 6:30, to drive us to our five-a-side football or our table tennis or anything else. Most people in Paisley now, in order to pay the mortgage or pay the rent, probably finish at 6 or 6:30. They sometimes bring work home with them, and they are so exhausted and concerned about spending time with their own kids, the likelihood that they have time to be supporting other kids in the community is that bit diminished. So time, I think, is one of the biggest challenges to modern community that we face. The alternative to that is, exactly as David said, finding forms of community which recognise those pressures while politicians are hopefully coping with constraining the time that people are having to work. And the most exciting example I saw this week is an organisation that I've just encountered for the first time called Paisley Transition Town. And that's saying, how can we green Paisley, because it's a largely urban constituency, how can we get some allotments and start working on it? We brought together a group of volunteers, they had their inaugural meeting last month, and they've set themselves the challenge of greening that community. And in that sense, they're not part of any formal organisation, they've taken it upon themselves to come together. It's a web-based community who meet on a regular basis and do it. I got in touch as the local MP this week, went along, heard what they were doing and said, listen, I'm keen to help. That kind of organic community organisation is, to me, a sign of people taking control, recognising the pressures they're under, but having a broader sense of commitment than simply to themselves and to their family. And all of those, to me, are pretty positive signs.
And what about you, David? Just to frame that, I mean, you've spoken of some of the heart-rending situations that have arisen and continue to arise because of the problem with people no longer trusting social workers as they did. So I don't necessarily want you to talk about that, but just to say, it's a different place. I mean, I live quite close to your constituency, and I understand that. So what would you like to see starting to mend? What would make you feel optimistic?
Well, the first thing to say is, this audience will understand this. If you're in the international development arena, and it's been my great privilege to go to many countries, particularly in Africa, and feel the force of a vibrant civil society, we often in this country feel comfortable talking about civil society in relation to developing countries, and very uncomfortable about talking about it in relation to this country. And so the first thing to say is I do feel a vibrant civil society. In my community, there are thousands of young people that march through the heart of Tottenham communicating that they are taking a stand on knife crime. Mine is a community in which there are many parks, actually. Sometimes you think about urban centres as devoid of parks, but if you're in Finsbury Park or one of my parks in North London, you will see on a Saturday, on a Sunday, many, many young people and many adults with them engaged in football teams and basketball teams and all sorts of group activity. People making a difference, and making a difference often for free. But what I think we need more of is it sometimes feels that that activity is fragmented or atomized. By that I mean the great thing about the Boys Brigade or the Scouts, which I was a member of, was there was this great national opportunity. And the guides.
And the brownies.
And the brownies.
And the Girls Brigade.
And the Girls Brigade.
And the Cubs.
And the Beavers.
But it was national. It was national. And I feel that we've got quite a lot of activity that doesn't always end up to the sum of its parts. Because actually I would love more opportunities for many of my civil society to be in conversation with civil society in Paisley. And, you know, one of the things that I have been entirely off message on in relation to the Labour Party is that I have called for a national civic service. I believe we need a space in which young adults are able to come together for a length of time, meet from different parts of the country, be engaged in positive activity that isn't about a certificate at the end of it. It's about service and about saying we value service. Hasn't got to be about the armed services, but it is a kind of modern version of the Peace Corps or something like that. And I believe that because I think we've got to put values into action.
We are coming to the end of the time that we've got, so I've got one last question for both of you. You've got a very active, engaged audience when you come to Greenbelt, people who genuinely care about the world that they're in, I think, mostly. If you had a message or one thing that you'd like them to engage in or think a little bit about, if they had the time, what would that be? For the community, I'm thinking, or something they could do in their community.
I've got a feeling that most people here probably are doing things in their community, but it's about thinking about what modern community is. I think modern community is not just geography. It's linking with other communities, and I think it, in an age in which Douglas has raised the issue of time, and this is a real challenge. It's about being, you know, as the Christian Socialist Movement are challenging all of us here to do, not just sending a postcard to campaign, but actually participating in that activity. And if you sometimes switch on the television and you see a politician trapped by a soundbite, by a clip, frustrating you because they don't seem to be speaking to your activities or your life, then it is incumbent of you to be engaged in the political process. All political parties come to points where they need renewal. And I'm quite sure that the Labour Party, the party of which I'm a member, obviously, has to be a movement again. And the way it becomes a movement, you remember it was born out of the trade union movement, is to reach back into civil society, reach back into people engaged in activity, and join forces with big strides that sometimes lie beyond it. But that won't happen unless people want to be active and engaged in that, and also have the intellectual courage to accept that that doesn't mean you're going to agree with everything. Let me be absolutely clear. I'm a member of their government. I don't agree with everything done in the name of my government. How could I possibly? I argue my corner within my government, and I have the respect to understand that sometimes I lose those arguments, and also the decency not to share those arguments with you. Not until I write a memoir one day anyway. But and that's the same as family. Sometimes you lose the argument with your parents or with your wife.
Regularly.
But it is that business of being engaged in it, because this stuff is important. And this is a critical, critical moment in this early part of the 21st century to be actively engaged in the politics that will shape the prospects for a younger generation particularly.
Thank you. We've had go back and join the Labour Party, so you can't have that. You could have something different.
Let me say this about political activity. It was George MacLeod, who I quoted earlier, the leader of the Ainu community, who said the task of religion and politics is different. Religion is about the will to share. Politics is about how we share. So in that sense, I don't diminish the importance of this audience and people continuing to engage in their communities of faith. It is, I hope, evident from the way David and I have spoken that we see it as fundamental to the character of the communities that we represent. But rather more cheekily, politics is about the people who turn up. And in that sense, if religion becomes not just your home but your prison, then actually you exclude yourself from a whole swathe of debates and engagements and issues. And I think, as David said, political parties go through periods when they need renewal, so too do churches and denominations. And in the Church of Scotland, of which I'm a member at the moment, we're really struggling to get enough ministers ordained to be able to service the parish ministry that I spoke about earlier. And there's actually a very live debate as to whether we should celebrate the demise of the parish ministry because new models will emerge to take its place, or whether actually if you lose the parish ministry, holding on to that sense of community, the whole work of the church will be diminished. And I kind of feel the same way about political parties. I don't deny that political parties need renewal, all political parties. But I'm not yet in a space where I think actually the pure blood of politics will be enhanced when political parties disappear. Because actually, at their best, all political parties are the bearers of particular visions of the good society. And it is inherent in those visions that they are communal. And in that sense, if we are serious about upholding strong communities, then I do continue to hold the very unfashionable view that organised political parties are not antithetical to that. They're actually one of the building blocks and foundations of those strong communities. So having promised not to be party political, I'll end by quoting the words on the back of my Labour Party membership card, which says, "By the strength of our common endeavour, we achieve more than by working alone." That seems to me to be as good a guide to what we should do in our own communities when we leave Greenbelt as anything else that you could have on the back of a membership card. It's about turning up. It's about taking your engagement, your faith, and your commitment out into the temporal life of your communities, and in recognizing that by working together, we can always achieve more than we can working